even a rainy day gets just a little bit brighter when there's a good laugh to be had. And there's a good laugh to be had every day. If yours are in short supply, today's guest is happy to supply one. Call it the Daily Laughsative. He does. Steve Behrman is a comic who appears on stage as Swami Beyondananda. As the Swami, Steve is the author of several books, including Driving Your Own Karma, When You See a Sacred Cow, Milk It for All It's Worth, Duck Soup for the Soul, and Swami for Precedent, I have to say this carefully, A Seven-Step Plan to Heal the Body Politic and Cure Electile Dysfunction. In his past life, Steve started an alternative high school in Washington, D.C., and co-authored a book about his experiences, No Particular Place to Go, Making of a Free High School. Steve Behrman, Swami Beyondananda, whatever name you go by, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, it's great to be here, and as a multiple personality, you get two for one.
Exactly.
Two-man, one-man show is what you call it,
and you'll be on stage tonight in Eugene at 8 o'clock at Tsunami Books, I see, and then at the Unitarian Fellowship in Ashland on Saturday night at 8 o'clock.
Yes, and you don't have to be a Unitarian Fellow, too. We welcome everybody.
That's good. Well, let's jump into that part of it, then. I mean, the fact is that this is not the kind of comic act that is going to feature F-bombs and multiple mentions of private body parts. But and you perform.
Although so many of those are public these days, you know,
aren't they?
They need to change them. Oh, your publics are showing there.
Quit looking at my publics.
Yeah, exactly.
But you perform in churches and places like that.
Yeah, a lot of conferences, churches, theaters, and so on. And it's because the humor is really designed to bring people together, to open things up, and it's funny. It's funny. In fact, I woke up with a funny feeling this morning, and you know, ever since I was a kid, I've just been that way. And
so, wake up laughing is really the description of your own life.
Yeah, I mean, there, you know, and again, comedy is a great counterbalance for everything else that's going on, and it gives us kind of a little bit of space as an observer to watch, and we call that self-facing laughter, where you're able to laugh in your own face, particularly laughing in the face of your own ego, self-importance, and that sort of thing. So the comedy is really for individuals to kind of look at themselves and one another and just lovingly laugh, because the Swami says, life is a joke, but God is laughing with us, not at us. The creator is watching the comedy channel. We're what's on. You know, so that's part of it. And then, of course, there's the spiritual and political aspect of it, our collective insanity that's kind of up for examination right now.
Well, and it seems like the last time I can remember having you in the studio in person, and I wasn't even the full-time host back then, was during the 2004 election campaign. And you'd written the book about curing electile dysfunction. The world seemed pretty insane back then. It doesn't seem a whole lot less so now to you, does it?
You know, as the Swami would say, you know, in 2008, we thought we had political climate change, and we had a new president, Barack Hussein Obama. And it really felt good that he was using his middle name so that we all could say, finally, America has a President Hussein. But the hopium has worn off.
The hopium.
And so as the book that I wrote in 2004 is still unfortunately relevant now, because, you know, somebody asked me a while back, you know, is there any difference between the two political parties? They asked the Swami, and the Swami says, oh, absolutely. The Republicans, they bend over backward for the bankers and special interests. Democrats are completely the opposite. They bend over forward.
So there's bending over, certainly. Which brings up the point, you were a political science major, weren't you?
Yes, but I have a little caveat. Mm-hmm. I never actually got to dissect a politician. I never really, you know, poli-sci lab, they tell you, but I never got that far.
All right. But did you decide that, I mean, if you had gone into political science and stuck with the more serious way of living, I mean, do you think it would have driven you to crying on a daily basis? You would have woken up crying instead of waking up laughing?
Of course, you know, because again, I actually, my first assignment, I was a teacher, and my first assignment was Washington, D.C. And my first night, I got to meet Dick Gregory and Pete Seeger, you know, just first night in town. And so it was a very, very interesting time, late 60s, early 70s. And as I became involved in various kinds of alternative politics, I remember there was a guy that I knew there who was a world famous expert on communal living. But unfortunately, nobody could stand to live with him. So I began to look at the contradictions between the ideal and the real deal, and that's sort of what got me much more into psychology and spirituality and so on over the years.
So you may be one of the few people who decided that a career in comedy was actually somewhat easier than another kinds of career.
Well, yeah, you know, it wasn't, I was a teacher, I was a professor at Wayne State University. Oh, is that kind of telling us that we're...
We have about a minute.
Okay. And I ended up getting a job doing tree work, and that's where I discovered my comedic genius and writing a little newspaper for my fellow workers.
And, all right. We'll talk more about the birth of Swami Beyond Ananda and the growth of Steve Behrman's comedy career when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Steve Behrman, who he is also Swami Beyond Ananda. As he pointed out, a one-man, two-man, or two-man, one-man show. Goes in either,
either way.
One-man, two-man, two-man, one-man. Steve Behrman, Swami Beyond Ananda, and your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today, back in the studio for the first time in a long time, Steve Behrman, a.k.a. Swami Beyond Ananda, a.k.a. the Cosmic Comic, performing a couple of shows in the region, in Eugene tonight at Tsunami Books at 8 o'clock, at the Unitarian Fellowship in Ashland tomorrow at 8 o'clock, performing Beyond Ananda and Beyond, a two-man, one-man show. You like getting people tongue-tied, don't you?
I think that's what tongues are for.
We're tying up. You can join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Visit with the Swami if you never have before. Talk to Steve as well. Either one's available. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's pick up where we left off. You were talking about being in the tree business and putting out a newsletter.
Well, you know, actually what happened was I was teaching at Wayne State University, teaching auto workers, labor history, and so on. It was a great job. I loved it. And then a funny thing happened. And often when a funny thing happened, it ain't that funny. And what happened, I got laid off. And so the only job I could take was doing tree work because I had lived on a farm and new equipment. And there I was, and another funny thing happened. A fellow worker and I decided that we were going to start a humorous newspaper for our coworkers, and we essentially created an ongoing interactive situation comedy where these regular guys became celebrities in this little paper. And we had a national audience. We had 200 subscribers all over the country at one point who were focused on the little doings at our little shop. A little shop of humors, it really taught me the power that humor has to let new ideas in under the radar, and bring playfulness. And of course, I realized, you know, this is my gift, and may as well just expand on it, and that's what I've been doing for about 25, 26 years.
The idea of getting things in under the radar, I mean, that's a real important one, isn't it? I mean, people realize people will laugh together. Even if they do nothing else together.
That's right. There was right after the second Iraq War began in 2003, I was doing a show down in Carlsbad, California. It was a military community. A friend of mine who's a comedian said, these people may not like your political material. So I kind of did a little meditation. What do? And it just said, be yourself, have fun, et cetera, et cetera. And so Swami gets out there in this very mixed audience and says, now I've been asked not to do any controversial political material, so you've been a wonderful audience. Good night. Began the show with that, and then, of course, I did all my material. And then one of the people came up to me at halftime, and she said, you know, I'm from a military family. My husband works at the Pentagon. And she says, I haven't heard this much truth in a room in a long time. So I considered that a compliment. One time, we lived in Texas for 8 years before we went through DTEX. And we did the Kerrville Music Festival, and this Texan comes up to us, comes up to me after a show, and he says, you know, you tell people what they don't want to hear in a way that they want to hear it.
That's a high compliment, isn't it?
It's a very high compliment. Neither of us were high, so it was so it was actually very even better. So I think that's what humor does, and that's why people get their news from Jon Stewart and Colbert and Bill Maher these days.
That was exactly where I was going to go next, was to ask about, I mean, this person is saying that's the most truth I've heard on a stage in a long time. I mean, the fact is that people are turning to people like Colbert and Bill Maher and Jon Stewart and The Daily Show to get news.
Well, I think it's because, you know, somebody said that years ago, they said the difference between the Russian press, Pravda, and the American press is that the Russians know they're being lied to. And, you know, back in the 80s when I was teaching my writing class at University of Michigan, one of my students was Boris, who had just arrived from the Soviet Union. He was one of these emigres during that period of time. And what he smuggled out of the Soviet Union were jokes, because that was the currency of truth, to let people know you were hip and they were hip. And so I looked at these jokes. I said, Boris, these are fabulous. Let's kind of clean them up a little. I'll work on the English with you, and we can submit them to, the Ann Arbor News. And he said, no, Playboy. So I said, okay, I'll humor him. So I sent him off to Playboy, and they loved him, and they published about, 20 or 30 of these jokes. The one that I remember, this is, again, the Brezhnev era in Russia. Mm-hmm. These two comrades are waiting in line for food. And at some point, one of them, it's like hours, and one of them just freaks out. And he says, I can't take it anymore. I'm going to go shoot Brezhnev. And off he goes. And he comes back an hour later, and his friend said, well, did you shoot Brezhnev? He goes, no, that line was longer.
Humor is very specific to times and places.
It is. Very specific. And so now I think that because there is so little truth that's actually being told, or the Swami would say, well, the only TV news network actually telling the truth about what they're broadcasting, CBS. You want a CBS? They got plenty of it.
So do you run along the lines of thought that are getting fairly common now about the fact that the media is too concentrated in the hands of corporate owners?
Well, yes, I think, that's exactly right. And so what's happened is that certain points of view have been marginalized. And, my way of looking at it, again, as a political scientist, is that if those guys have their way, then the people talking about fracking and GMOs 5 years from now will be as marginalized as the people talking about 9/11 truth. And that's how it works. It's kind of like soft totalitarianism. Kind of kinder and friendly face, but the same big fat behind,
There's something to be said for the effect of comedy to buffer news as well. I mean, particularly when you get it from somebody like Jon Stewart. And the situation that comes to mind is coming home during the Republican convention, I think in 2004, and seeing my wife's face like this. Oh my God! Did you hear Zell Miller's speech? Zell Miller was the Democratic governor of Georgia, or former governor of Georgia at the time, mm-hmm. and gave a speech that was like red meat for the Republicans and really, really, really rough on John Kerry, the Democratic nominee. Rather than watch the TV recording of the speech, I went online and looked at the jokes that people were making about it. And it was things like, gee, Zell Miller ate the baby. I thought Dick Cheney was going to do that. Having seen the comments then, it was easier to watch the content of the speech itself.
Yeah, I think that's true. And the buffering works two ways because, George Carlin used to say, and I love George Carlin. He was such a genius and a little cynical. And he said that most people go to comedy clubs to release just enough stress to go back to their miserable existence. And I'm looking at comedy as a way of not just waking people up, but allowing them to stay awake by heartening them. I got this idea that there is often a aha in the wake of the ha-ha, and then there's an ah as we leave our heads and go into our hearts, where we have a lot more capacity for creativity and creative solutions. And, rather than reinforcing the fear, we want to open people up so that they are more resourceful.
Is there anybody else you think doing quite what you do? Because you sort of travel around in sort of places where there are new agey things going on the edges of religion and spiritualism, and not necessarily on the edges either, for that matter.
I don't think there's really very many people who are doing all of the spiritual, the political, and all of this, and not really pulling any punches, And I was so upset after the 2010 election, watching, how the Democrats snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, I was so upset. I was doing a show in Key West, Florida, and the line that came to mind was, "We have a deeply divided body politic. Half of the population believes our elections are broken, and the other half believe that they're fixed."
That's a good way to look
at it. And it made me feel better.
Uh-huh.
That one made me feel better because I was able to say something that needed to be said. And I think that one of the if you look at Fox News and so on, and, 80% of that is lies. And I wrote this this article a while back called Come On, Baby, Fight My Liar, which was about Fox News. And I pointed out that conservatives like being lied to, whereas progressives prefer lying to themselves.
so you're
very popular with everybody. because I think that that's true. I think that that progressives try to soften things around the edges. I had a great conversation with our buddy Jeff Golden the other day, and he was talking about transpartisan engagement. And, in a way, they're so happy that the right-wingers have come in that they don't want to step on any toes. And I go, you know what? You got to speak directly to people, heart to heart, but speak your truth. And people, there's way more respect in the room when that happens rather than just kind of making allowances because you think the other people, need to be protected or won't get it. I find, and I've been doing this for years, the more directly you speak to people, the more welcoming they are because they know where you stand. And they know that you can engage and you're not going to, pretend that you agree with them when you don't.
I need to remind our listeners, we're talking to Steve Behrman, who's also Swami Beyond Ananda, performing shows in Eugene tonight and Ashland tomorrow, and visiting with us for the first time in the studio in a long time. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We can talk about funny views of modern events with Steve, as he's got lots of those. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. So speaking your truth directly and letting people know where you stand, and you get a more honest conversation, you're saying, but this is the age of rage, isn't it? I mean, and it's certainly stoked that way. I mean, we'd like to talk about the fact that what we offer on this program is a quiet conversation, which might be dull to some people's minds, but I think it beats having the people yell at each other like they do on cable news so often. Given that conditioning in society at large, how do you express that truth calmly?
Well, I think part of it is speaking clearly and directly. I think so much of the babblum, I call it babblum, that's on there is specifically designed to keep the left and right from having that conversation. And so the more heat, the less light. The more heat there is, we go into fight or flight. We have fewer creative resources. And so there are many, I think since I've been here last, there have been huge developments and transpartisan conversations that are happening all over the country. And these are conversations that are specifically designed to get past that. And again, you have to honor, whatever comes in the room. If somebody is angry, you have to be able to create a container that's big enough to hold that anger and at the same time hold the person. There was something that happened just the other day. Joan Baez was doing a concert, and outside there were these four pickets who were Vietnam veterans who were picketing her for being, for aiding and comforting the enemy. They got her kind of mixed up with Jane Fonda. And so she came out and talked with them, and she brought her manager, who is a Vietnam vet, and they explained that one of her albums, all of the funds went toward supporting Vietnam veterans. And at the end, three out of the four guys hugged her and said, "Could you sign my picket sign?"
Really?
So actual engagement from the heart is what makes a difference. And it breaks through these, because I saw a guy with a bumper sticker when I was in Florida saying, "I'm not a liberal." And I started thinking, the liberal that he thinks he's not doesn't really exist. And the conservative that other people may, charge with this or that, they don't really exist. So it's two straw men or straw women, if you want to be egalitarian about it, fighting each other, two vicious dogmas barking and biting.
The So, but it really gets to a point of having to say, what are you saying to me? Instead of making assumptions like, oh, I've heard your stuff already. You really have to, which implies a certain vulnerability on the receiver.
You know, and one of our, you know, our great cohorts, Joseph McCormick, who lived here in Ashland for a while, when he did his transpartisan engagements, it always began with people sharing their stories. You know, stories about how they related to being an American when they were children, et cetera, et cetera. So when we bring our stories into the conversation, we are automatically more humanized at the beginning. And Joseph was very successful. He brought, you know, groups of leaders together, and he had Joan Blades from Move On and Michelle Combs from Christian Coalition become friends. And they did a very successful program to preserve net neutrality back there a number of years ago. And I now that it's up again, I just sent Joan an email and I said, maybe you need to do this again. And she said, wow, thanks for reminding me. And she's going to contact her new friend, who is the woman who was the head of Christian Coalition. They became friends.
Well, and they stayed friends.
They stayed friends.
Oh, that's good. Let's take some calls here. We have Monty and Roseburg on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Steve Behrman, a.k.a. Swami Beyond Ananda.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Behrman, in passing, mentioned the truth about 9/11, and that's one of my interests. I'm wondering if he would elaborate on that comment that he made.
All right, thanks for that.
Well, I'll elaborate two ways. First of all, the 9/11 truth movement has been marginalized in two ways. One, you really can't offer any alternative on the public airwaves generally unless, you know, they kick Rosie O'Donnell off. The other thing is that it's been tainted with disinformation, which I think is intentionally designed. If you put a big fat lie in the middle of a bunch of truths and you're able to disprove the big fat lie, then those truths become, we call it a dismissal attack on the truth. So my theory about it is that there's one, I know one thing for sure about 9/11, same as I know about the Kennedy assassination. The only thing I know about those two things is that the official stories are not true. What is true, I don't know. But I can I think that the official stories on both of those cases have been disproved by great evidence and are certainly tainted. I mean, the Kennedy assassination, that's a foregone conclusion. Read Jim Douglas's book, JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Mattered. And, you know, when you're 30 pages into the book, you will understand. And he just keeps providing massive evidence. And, you know, 9/11 is a fractal of the Kennedy assassination. It seems that simply the way the propaganda machine began to work afterward, how people who right at the beginning said, gee, that looks like a planned demolition, or, you know, began to say things that were not in agreement with the official story, they were made to change their story or discredited. And you go back to the Kennedy assassination, you find the same thing. So I don't know what happened related to 9/11. I am skeptical about the official story for quite a few reasons. And I think the biggest reason is that there was an exercise going on that very day, a simulation of the very thing that happened.
Where was that?
There was they were actually doing an exercise to like a simulation of a hijacking. And so when you listen to recordings of the air traffic controllers, they were confused as to whether this was a real incident or part of that exercise. So that would indicate to me that at the very least there was a leak in the system where somebody knew and that was the day to do it. I'm not an expert on it, but I've read quite a bit about it, and I just tend to be skeptical about the official story.
And as you pointed out, the fact that the media are in the hands of a few these days with corporate control of a lot of the major outlets, certainly doesn't help change your mind much. We'll talk much more with Steve Behrman, a.k.a. Swami Beyond Ananda, the cosmic comic, performing in Eugene tonight and Ashland tomorrow. Back here on the Jefferson Exchange with Steve and Swami and your phone calls and emails in a minute 30. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Steve Behrman, the cosmic comic, Swami Beyond Ananda. Choose your names for him. He's performing a couple of shows in the region. He will be doing Wake Up Laughing and Wise Up Loving, an evening of cosmic comedy at Tsunami Books in Eugene tonight at 8. Beyond Ananda and Beyond, a two-man, one-man show tomorrow at 8 at the Unitarian Fellowship in Ashland. Good to have him back in the studio. We've visited many times over the years. And you can join us, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Well, we went from comedy into some pretty heavy stuff, talking about 9/11 truth, you manage in your act to sort of look like you're taking everybody's side, don't you?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is I was actually asked to do a comedy routine at one of these 9/11 events, and you know, as I realized, you know, about 5 years ago, I did something called the Transpartisan Political Summit. There were many, I mean, talk about a full spectrum of political points of view. Democrats, Republicans, Independents, Libertarians, Radicals on every side. And they had something called the instant, it was in Denver about 5 years ago, they had something called instant keypad voting, where you can vote anonymously on an issue. And you say, well, how many people think this? So out of that group of several hundred people of a wide range of political spectrum, 70% of those people in that room believe that the official 9/11 story was hokum. Now, what that tells me at the very, very bottom line is that the media and the power structure has lost us, that has lost credibility, and in a certain sense, legitimacy. That's the serious issue. So as we poke around the edges with comedy, one of the reasons why we're poking around the edges is to give us the courage, because laughter creates courage. It's a quality of the heart, you know, core, heart, courage. And it creates the courage for us to look at what is a more likely story. And then, you know, the Swami in my comedy routine, it always leaves people on an up note, meaning, you know, Swami would say, well, there's two kinds of mystics in the world. There are the optimistics and the pessimistics, you know. And,
right.
The pessimists are telling us the sky is falling. The optimists say, no, it just looks that way because we're ascending. So I always try to leave people not just laughing but smiling in a space of presence. I got one more story about that. I was very honored when I was doing some freelance newspaper work in Michigan to go see a show that Dick Gregory did in the late 70s in Michigan. And it was a full auditorium at Oakland University. He had pretty much racially balanced, half black, half white. And through comedy, he deconstructed the white man, the white woman, the black man, and the black woman. He did equal on everybody. And in the process of deconstructing, in the process of just, you know, ripping away their stories and pulling the veils and pulling the curtains and lifting the veils. By the end of this program, everyone in the room had been completely busted and completely elevated. And it's so very rare in this country to be in an entirely mixed race room where everybody is looking each other in the eye, because when he got done, we were all human beings. Our stories were kind of lying in shreds at the bottom. Our foibles had been exposed. And there was something about that that was so empowering, because at the end, nobody was put down and everybody was put up.
Wow. That's an amazing story. Are there recordings of that anywhere?
I only wish. I don't know.
All right. Let's go to Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Steve Behrman.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that the time that you took the break was totally blank on the air. There was nothing on. So I'm just letting you know that.
Oh, something didn't fire then. Okay, thanks for that.
Yeah. Hi, Swami Beyond Ananda. You're a favorite of mine, and I want to thank you for bringing the light of truth to people through humor. I do believe it gives us more courage. And I was wondering if you could direct some comments about your work with Bruce Lipton in the light of, you know, for example, you are out there triggering or creating an environment that would trigger our DNA for truth and and a loving community rather than what's constructed in the environment that we live in primarily of fear and, you know, just fear. So could you describe Bruce Lipton's work a little bit and then how we might actually apply that in our lives as you are, mm-hmm. you are spreading a different kind of environment for our own DNA to be activated.
All right. Thanks for that, Julie. Appreciate it.
Wow, what a great question, Julie. Well, on the more serious side, about 5 years ago, I published a book with Bruce Lipton, who's a cellular biologist. Book's called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future, and a Way to Get There From Here. And Bruce, his first book was called Biology of Belief, in the very, very short form on Bruce's work. He is a pioneer in a science called epigenetics, which essentially says that our DNA and our genes are activated and impacted by our environment and by our beliefs, by our thoughts, and by our feelings. And so spontaneous evolution takes our collective thoughts, beliefs, and feelings and subconscious programming and says, well, what has been the impact of that? And the Swami would call that the impact would be the lowest common denominator, life by the lowest common denominator. And so at this time of awakening right now, which I've got a new book I'm working on called The Evolutionary Upwising, as we wake up and wise up, what Bruce and I came to, and this is based on his background as a cellular biologist and an evolutionary biologist, the next phase of human evolution, because evolution always involves increased community and connection and increased awareness, is that we recognize ourselves as cells in the body of a larger organism called humanity. And when, you know, because we have a wonderful community of cells underneath our skin, 50 trillion cells, they all get along. We have universal health care, full employment, no cell left behind. You know, so it's really a very, very great system that we have. And if we look at our human endeavors, or often inhuman endeavors, we have ruled by the lowest common denominator, and we have autoimmune dysfunction, all of the war and the unnecessary forms of competition, where we spend so much of our energy fighting and resisting one another rather than building together. So this evolutionary upwising that Bruce and I began to introduce in Spontaneous Evolution is people really waking up and recognizing that we're all in this together. And the mission I have with the evolutionary upwising is to bring all good intentions under one big intent, thrival for all.
Thrival for all, that's good.
Thrival, you know, because we have to shoot past survival. We know how to do that. But given the tremendous crises that we're facing right now, there is a mega opportunity for evolution to this new way of being. And it's good to remember, because so many people say, well, that's so utopian. What we call utopian, our body calls health.
Good point. We have about 6 minutes left and a couple of calls to take. Here's Eli in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Steve Behrman, a.k.a. Swami Beyond Ananda.
Hi. Boy, I had a different thing, but just hearing what he said, I really appreciated his calling 9/11 a fractal of the Kennedy assassination, because it was obvious that the media and the highest levels of government were already in place to do the cover-up and whatnot in both of those. And what that means is that the control system that achieved both of those cover-ups was in place that whole time and is still in place. And that's what I'm hoping people become aware of, because, you know, the pitches that Obama uses about, you know, health care mm-hmm. for everybody and everyone's going to be taken care of are the same pitches that, you know, Stalin used. I spoke with a woman from Russia, and she said, you know, the lines Obama is using, it's the same lure that the communists used.
All right, so you're finding no difference between left and right, in other words, with where the statements that get
made. Oh, yeah, the left and right is, like he said, it's like a false paradigm of that's built by this media control system saying, well, this is what the left's saying, you get mad at them. And then they say, well, this is what the right's saying, you get mad at them. And we have much more in common with each other than the left and right people, citizens, than any of us have with the leaders at the top who claim to be representing the left and right.
Okay, let's get Stephen on this before we run out of time. Thanks for the call. Yeah,
I appreciate that, Eli. And just a little bit of clarification. You're absolutely right. When you read, and I recommend everybody, go get James Douglas with two S's at the end, JFK and the Unspeakable, Why He Died and Why It Mattered. And what you learn is that by 1963, I'm talking as a political scientist mm-hmm. here, and not pulling any punches, there is so much evidence that by that time, the CIA in particular had infiltrated every aspect of our society. So in the military, you might have thought you were getting orders from the top, but really you were getting orders from the side, from somebody who was part of this cadre. And so I don't really want to – it's not the point of my presentation or anything, but I do want to say that Swami says, the truth shall upset you free. And I'll tell one story. My wife, Trudy, was born in Germany. And when she was a teenager, she went back to Germany. And she asked her relatives, what did you know about the Holocaust? And they said, well, we heard it was American propaganda. And frankly, we chose to believe that because to believe anything else was too horrific. And so when you begin to and I think this is the veils being lifted. It's really it's almost like there's been a perpetration in the family. You know, a child was raped or abused or something, and nobody can talk about it. And the entire family constellation is in post-traumatic stress disorder because of what's happened. Our body politic has been in PTSD since the Kennedy assassination. And that means it means many things. It means that it's very hard for people to really discern the truth. You have people who feed on these conspiracy theories. They get nourished by it. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go there. And I've turned off that part of me. It's very important that we acknowledge them. And then we say together, and what do we want to build together? You know, we're going to focus on the virtues and values that 90% of us have in common, but we have not been able to have a conversation to agree that we want our government to tell us the truth. We want transparency. We want real justice. And we want a media that's not the tool of the very few. That's the conversation that needs to happen. It's not so much about who did what to who. It's the new conversation is, and now, what are we going to build together?
All right, so something new, what we don't have and want to, rather than what we have and don't like. Let's go to Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Steve Behrman, Swami Beyondananda.
Good morning. How does one go about finding the humor in the current administration's missiles from drones policy in multiple countries?
Well, you know, sometimes humor, first of all, in actually saying that, I mean, I did the Swami State of the Universe address last year on the whole thing as well. The Bush policy just droned on through the Obama administration. And I think that there's really two jobs of humor. One job is to shine the light on the darkened corridors of power. And then the second job is to shine the light on what we can do together. There is an amazing fact about Gandhi. At some point, Gandhi had the realization that the people in India outnumbered the British occupiers by a factor of 300-1. And that kind of changed his perspective. So when people tell me or tell the Swami, everything is controlled by just a few people, the Swami says, well, I think that's great news. It means there's way, way, way more of us than there are of them. So in the more of us around all of these issues, the first thing that has to happen is we need to rediscover the sacred, meaning that which transcends both religion and non-religion. That the stuff that has no words, the stuff that when we take a moment of silence, when we start a sacred circle, there's no religion in there and there's no non-religion in there. It's simply acknowledging being part of a larger web. when we activate this power of the heart, we call it heartland security. When we activate the power of the heart, then we will be able to address all of these issues as not just children of God, but adults of good.
Wow, we got a whole lot deeper than I ever thought we'd get talking to Steve Behrman, the cosmic comic today. Deb in Talent has an email question. I have a ticket to the Ashland performance. Should I meditate or drink to prepare?
Well, I would actually put my ticket in the blender and drink it.
Just combine all the activities at once. Steve Behrman has the cosmic comic, Swami Beyond Ananda, at Tsunami Books in Eugene tonight at 8 in Ashland at the Unitarian Fellowship tomorrow night at 8. Always a pleasure to have you in the studio, Steve.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Take care. Tomorrow, no, wait, make that Monday on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock. We'll talk about how Ashland Parks are preparing for the drought season probably to come. We'll talk to the folks behind the Josephine County Jail levy. The pro side on that will come on and talk to us. Then we'll talk about mystery writing with return guest April Henry, a Rogue Valley former resident who's made it big in the mystery writing business. That's all Monday on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant is Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.